Hi, everyone, and welcome to episode 121 of the Medieval Podcast. I'm Danielle Cebulski, also known as the 5-Minute Medievalist. For a whole lot of people on the planet these days, finding ways to live out the medieval past is a way to deal with their own past, as well as the stresses and complications of modern life. This can involve everything from using experimental archaeological techniques to rediscover medieval grooming products, to getting suited up to spend an afternoon fighting full out with your friends in armored combat. For those who enjoy reliving centuries-old martial arts, armored combat is a fun way to relieve stress, get some exercise, and spend some time with community. And it's something that, unlike in the real Middle Ages, has started to embrace women as an integral part of that community. To find out more about these women in shining armor, filmmaker Adrian Cicerone created Steel Song, a documentary that captures the lives of three women and their journey to become modern medieval knights. As a former professional ballet dancer, Adrian knows something about the demands of physical and creative pursuits. Steel Song is his first foray into exploring the lives of medieval armored combatants, but his second documentary film. His first, Land of the Strays, a film about one woman's quest to care for 1,000 stray dogs at her sanctuary in Costa Rica, won a Vimeo Staff Pick Award and was published on National Geographic's Short Film Showcase, Short of the Week, and Lad Bible Originals, as well as being an official selection at the Docklands Film Festival. This week, I spoke with Adrian about Steel Song, what it was like to learn about and learn from the women in armored combat, and how it went when Adrian himself suited up in full armor. Thanks, Adrian, for joining me to talk about your new documentary, Steel Song. It's great to have you on the podcast.
Thanks so much for having me. It's a real pleasure being here. Thank you.
It was a great film. I really enjoyed it. And you're one of these people who has an interest in medieval studies, but you're not directly involved in medieval studies. So you're a great person to talk to and really get a sense of how things are going out in the real world. So how did you get interested in armored combat in the first place?
It's interesting. Initially, I wanted to do a documentary about hobbies. So I started doing all sorts of research. And then, as you just mentioned, I love medieval history. And so throughout my research, I would kind of take a break and I'd just start watching, like, I don't know, you name it, some fantasy film or Kingdom of Heaven or what have you. And so obviously YouTube's kind of like, oh, he likes this. So it kind of recommended me to this video, a short documentary about the sport. And it was just this perfect timing. I was like, oh, wait, what is this? Because this is like this aesthetic that I love, and it's such a strange and different, you don't see this every day, right? And so I'm watching it, and the excitement, the violence, the aesthetics, the people, and suddenly I just see, you know, you basically see only men. And so I'm like, okay, but suddenly there's just this woman who appears and takes off her helmet and she lets down her hair. And I was like, whoa, what a powerful moment. This woman in a world that we all assume is just historically a male-dominated sport. And I just thought it was so beautiful, the inclusivity of that. And so I was like, I have to know more about this. Who is this woman? You know, what drew her to this sport? Why do it? Because I really do believe that hobbies are also kind of a reflection of the self. It really says a lot about who you are. Why do you choose a specific hobby? Whether it be escape, overcome fear, what have you. And so I just was like, there's a reason why she's doing this. And I want to know more. And so her name was Janelle Ironside. And I realized that she owns a combat school in Colorado Springs, Ironside Medieval Combat. And so that's how I was able to find a way to contact her. And then the rest is history. It kind of grew off from there.
The rest is history and documentary.
Yeah, literally.
So for your documentary, you follow the Armored Combat League. So that's kind of an association. Can you tell us a little bit about what that is for people who don't know? With the caveat that you're not an expert on it, but tell us a bit about what you learned.
So what I learned is essentially it is a group of medieval enthusiasts, just people who absolutely love all things medieval, but especially it is essentially an extreme sport. It's full contact. It's 15th century armor with blunt steel weapons. And as Miranda, a wonderful woman who kind of runs the show, helps run the show, she was like, you know, just essentially beating the snot out of your friends with blunt steel weapons. And that's basically what it is. And it's a joy to watch. And these are people who they're not paid. None of them are professionals. I think it is a way for people to get together and to find a common ground through something, through this passion. At the time, it was called the Armored Combat League. since then, it has split into two different groups. From my understanding, you have now the Armored Combat Worldwide and Armored Combat Sports. I can't get into the details of the differences and or why it kind of went into two different directions. But these are all very, very kind and welcoming. And just, I think that's in part why the documentary was able to happen, was because of the community, because they're just, yeah, they welcomed us with such open arms. It's intimidating. You know, you show up there and there's all these like 7 foot tall behemoths, like, you know, in their armor and you're just with your little dinky camera looking up at these huge people, but they're all like, oh, hey, like, welcome. They're all making you feel, yeah. So it was, yeah, it's a group. It's a good time. It's a good time.
You definitely get a sense of that in the film. This everybody talks about what a great community is. Like you, I don't think there's a single person that you interviewed for it that didn't say, wow, what a great community this yes. is. So you decided to focus on the women specifically. And as you've said, there are not that many that are doing this sport. So what made you focus on the women as a group? You were talking about Janelle, but you've decided to focus on a few women instead. What drew you to the women in this sport?
Yeah, it's interesting. It's delicate. And it's, especially as a male director, it took a lot of thought, my perspective and the angle and how do I approach this, right? Because there's only so many ways I can go about it. And I want to be incredibly respectful. First of all, I felt that it would have been on like, I guess like the top of the iceberg, like the top layer was just, it's a different perspective. I think it would be a different way to introduce this sport for audiences, you know, because again, as I said, it's like, we all just think, oh, big dudes, you know, beating each other up, medieval combat, you know, I'm like, well, there's a whole other world. And it says so much about the sport, the inclusivity of it all. And then how to approach it was, I wanted to be very careful to not show them as like these imaginary shield maidens. You know, I wanted to be incredibly respectful with that, that they're people. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to show that. And I feel, and I want to be very careful when I say this, but I feel like many women, and they've told me this, that it feels like every day they're putting on armor, not even just in the arena, but just in life. And I felt that that was such a poignant thing to hear. And I think also because I mostly grew up, my father is frequently always away working. So I grew up, spent a lot of time with my mother. And there's just a lot of women in my life, friends, family. I've always been, and I've always just had such an absolute respect. And I feel maybe as a man, a greater kind of just being able to see a perspective, I think compared to most men, I was just always just around women, as I said, family, friends. And I just find them just, all their stories are just so brave and so beautiful. And so I digress. The reason why, and going with that, is Shoshana, Bridget, Julie. First, I met Janelle, and then Janelle couldn't compete because of her knee. So I was like, well, I want to kind of leave, go outside of Colorado Springs, not just follow the school. So she said, well, I have this student called Shoshana. And Shoshana was already making a name for herself in the sport. She was already like doing really, really well. And I learned that she was actually a military veteran. Again, an incredible story right there, an interesting perspective. And then as I started filming, I started meeting more and more women. And I met Julie and then Bridget. And Julie, hearing this, a mother who's a domestic abuse survivor, again, a fighter outside of the arena. Bridget, autism, essential tremors, a fighter outside the arena. And I was just like, this is my story here. And these are the people who I should go with.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm glad that you've just kind of given us a little bit of their stories, because I think their stories are hugely important. And I think it speaks to the sensitivity with which you filmed this, that they were able to be so vulnerable with you, because you can see as they're speaking, they're not sure how it's going to be received, but they're really, really open. And I really have a lot of respect for these women. And I think that the work that they've done in speaking with you about this is really going to be helpful in helping other women see themselves in the sport. So I think it's great how these women have shared with you. So one of the things that I think maybe made them a little bit vulnerable in this is that, as I was saying to you before we recorded, sometimes this sport is not seen or not taken very seriously, both in our community and outside of our community. So is that something that you had to keep in mind when you're filming this in order to make them not look like cartoons when they're doing it? How did you handle that?
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, it's a good question. Yeah, it's, again, as I said before, a lot of thought got into how to approach this. And in filming their stories, as I mentioned before, not trying to show them as shield maidens and glorify, I just really wanted to capture what was in front of me. And I was very careful to not over glorify the sport, And so like film it as some huge, big, epic blockbuster film. And then when people go and actually see it with this expectation, they might be like, oh, wait, it's not this, not every blow is in slow-mo. And people are quick to judge. And I didn't want, as you said, I didn't want to make fun of the sport either. This film doesn't take itself seriously, but it also has death because that is life. It's a balance. And I didn't want to make fun of it either because these people are having fun, but we don't want to make fun of them for doing that. And as I mentioned, it's like, at the end of the day, people also be like, oh, well, you know, like football or golf. And now I love football and golf. Don't get me wrong. But at the end of the day, golf is a man hitting a ball into a hole with a stick. Football is a group of people wearing helmets, throwing a ball around and hitting each other. It's just that because of media and honestly money, it has, these sports have been glorified to be accepted as normal. And yet something that as a tradition, as a history, which is medieval combat, these duels have been going on since obviously way before us, you know, and now people are like, oh, that's so weird. It's like, there's this thing about like, if you're not a part of today, then there's something wrong with you. You know, people who love, I don't know, wearing 1920s fashion, even though it's kind of in right now with the hipsters, but it's still kind of like overall, you're kind of like, oh, that's kind of a strange. So again, people are always quick to judge. And I think a big part of this documentary too is about that. It's like, yes, we all judge, but I think before we speak, we should question our judgment and understand why are we criticizing it or why do we think it's strange?
Yeah, absolutely. You said that beautifully. I love that. Great. Thank you. I do want to continue with this for a second in that, so you're a filmmaker and you are aware that you're going to have to sell this film or get people to watch it. Was there a temptation to, as you say, over-glorify, like do those slow-mo shots or really spend more time focusing on the armor or the style of fighting? Because you don't spend a lot of time like, hey, let's investigate the armor or, you know, the weapons themselves. So was there a temptation to kind of have to do that, that you had to fight against?
Definitely. There was moments where it's like, I'll start filming and I'll start kind of feeling my camera and I'm sort of kind of drifting. Like I'm imagining like, I don't know, like some, oh, like in my mind. And I'm kind of going like, I'm like, no, Adrian, this is a documentary. These are people's lives. You got to respect that. Remember, like ground yourself and back to reality here. And so, as you said, the selling of it and everything, I wanted to film it in a way almost like a home video. But just a little bit aesthetically heightened, just a little bit. Because I want to also show kind of what I think in their minds, which is a truth, is that there's this sort of an escapism because all hobbies are an escape ultimately. So there's a bit of an escapism there. But I also, as a documentarian, I'm not a documentarian, I just made a documentary, but I think that there's a similarity between that and being a journalist where you just essentially have to be true. But the difference I think is that as a documentarian, you want to open people's curiosity. So I want to show people, but I don't want to tell them everything. I want people to also afterwards think about it and then go and Google or, you know, go on Vimeo, watch whatever about this sport and inform themselves. And in doing so, maybe that will introduce them to medieval history. And that can be a gap and a bridge into something where, oh, wow, that's such a, I don't know, whether it be the aesthetics, you know, oh, I love the armor. And then they just start Googling and then they start learning about things. And in so doing, learning about themselves and where they are today. I think there's something important about not showing too much, but just saying just enough.
Well, we're definitely vibing on like gateways to getting people interested in medieval history. Definitely. And I think that this will accomplish that in a lot of ways. So I'm hoping that lots of people see it. Is this one of the reasons that you decided to go with more medieval music? Because the background music for all of this is very medieval, even if it's, you know, recorded by modern artists in a modern context. Is that the reason that you chose for this music to accompany these battle scenes? Because I'm thinking one of my favorite movies is, my favorite movie probably, is A Knight's Tale. And of course, the background for that is meant to get you hyped up and excited about this. The soundtrack for a Steel song is a lot more mellow and it has a lot more of an authentic feel. So was this kind of along the same lines of wanting to get people interested in the Middle Ages generally?
It's interesting. The music, I think sometimes in all things creative, I think sometimes there's just an impulse and we don't even know where it comes from. There's just a reaction. And I felt that for whatever reason, I will admit that also I was kind of in this like huge medieval Celtic music phase at the time. So that might've helped kind of, you know, influence what's going on. But it just felt right. I felt Celtic music because purely medieval music, I didn't want to go in that direction because I did try. And as beautiful as it is, I think to some today, and especially because I saw some documentaries about this brand stuff, they use medieval music almost in a way it's like, oh, this is fun. And it's kind of like, it can almost be comedic. And again, I want to be very careful and respectful. I never want to make fun of the sport or the people who do it. So I'm like, what's a fine balance? And I was like, oh my gosh, Celtic music. And it's the closest thing that sounds, and there are medieval tunes in it. So I wanted something that bridges the gap. And also Celtic music was, you know, very much played in America in the early 1800s. And so it's like, this is perfect segue there. There's a beautiful moment when, I'm not going to say too much about the film, but there's a moment where Bridget is having, she's experiencing a lot of pain after a fight. And it's a very powerful moment. And in saying I don't want to show them as shield maidens, I felt for whatever reason, though, at that moment, it deserved having Hildegard being played. I felt having that voice, just this pure, single, the voice of a woman singing, and just like this idea where it's like, even though visually it looks like she's falling apart, we know that in there, in her mind, there is such a fight that is keeping her up and uplifted. And I felt that music perfectly symbolized that moment. In short, the music was more just impulse than like a, and again, I didn't want to be cool. I didn't want to stay for this documentary. I could have been like, oh, let's put some American rock. And granted, that would have been amazing. That would have been really cool.
But maybe not
for the direction of how I approached this film.
No, I think that's right. And I think that the music that you've chosen is, as you say, not distracting. If you had more like recorders and things like that, it might be distracting from what you're actually seeing. But I think that the level of music that you have is both recognizably medieval, but it's not distracting, which is really important. So along this line, a lot of the people that are in the film talk about their own creativity. So creativity is a huge theme that I don't know if you intended, but it's coming through the film. So can you talk about some of the ways in which creativity was involved in these women, their lives, how they're participating in the sport, and how this came through in the film?
Yes, creativity, again, I think everyone is creative. Might sound cliche or corny, what have you, but there's a truth in that. Everyone is creative. I think just a lot of people are afraid to show it. And what I found what was beautiful is that everything that they did that is creative, external hobbies, whether it be Shoshana with her art, Julie with her gun practice or training, Bridget with her writing, ultimately everything is connected to that sport in some way. So as you can see, Shoshana, her art, it's all things medieval. She's a very talented artist. You see all her, and it brings more meaning to the sport. And the same with, like, for example, you see Bridget at the end, she wrote a song, and she wrote a song about what it is to be a medieval fighter. Again, it felt natural to show that. Some people were like, oh, that's armored combat, that's it. I'm like, no, people are much more complex than that. And you can see that armored combat is ultimately a creative response to an emotional need. It's really just like, how do you overcome your fear? There's so many ways to go. I don't know, go skydiving. That's creative, but I don't think there's something artistic about putting on medieval garb. And you see, I mean, all of them, even, let's talk about the men. It's like, you know, these are some dudes who are, I mean, these are some tough men. Like, these guys, you do not want to mess with them. But there's absolute sweethearts. And it's like, again, they could have gone and just gone boxing. And there's an art to boxing. I'm not criticizing these other external sports, but there's something, and there's an initial creativity to it. There's a sensitivity. There is an ability to love the past, to love imagination, to put on, I don't know, find different colors. They're all talking about their aesthetics of their helmets, and there's creativity in everybody. And you can see that.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's true. You're coming up with a whole bunch of things that I think are really important for people to think about generally when they think about the Middle Ages, and that knights were taught to read poetry and they were taught to dance. And when we think about this combat as being a completely separate thing, then we're missing the fact that these are human and well-rounded creatures. We often talk about knights being killing machines because that's their training, but that doesn't mean that they weren't good dads or, you know, good husbands or good friends.
Exactly.
Yeah. So when we talk about the masculine aspect of it, I think that creativity is also really important. But it's interesting that you mentioned that, because it's unlike other sports in that in golf, you don't pick your own uniform in the same way. You don't paint your clubs. You don't design anything. And it's a completely different thing.
Yeah, you see there's a cute shot, like towards the end of the film, they all meet at the national championship. Essentially, it's a qualifier to see who goes to represent the United States in the World Cup, which if I had money, I wish I could have gone. But there's a shot that I love, and I didn't even catch it when I was shot. It was through editing. I was like, oh my God, that's hysterical. It's like, again, all these battle axes and huge clubs and all these things of pain and death and everything. And you see on this sword, obviously belonging to one of the male fires, it's like just this like engraving of like a cat who's sleeping. And I was just like, it's just such a, again, it just shows you the creativity in everyone. You know, it's like, it doesn't matter who we are all ultimately sensitive creatures, and we just find ways to protect ourselves. And that, whether it be through wearing armor or whatnot. And so again, I digress or being repetitive, but it's beautiful to see the creativity in the sport.
Yeah. And it's something that you don't get to see in a lot of sports. So it's beautiful to, as you say, to see that come out. So you've seen a lot of fighting when you're filming this, lots of fighting. Did you notice a difference in the style of the way the women were fighting? Because, well, I'd like to find out what you see. As a martial artist myself, I do notice a difference sometimes in how different genders fight. So how did you see this when you were filming it?
There is a lot more planning. A lot. The fighting is a little bit, yeah, you can, it's more calculated. You can tell, like, the guys, it's like, oh, like, guys over there, let's go for it. Not don't get me wrong, I'm joking. But I think with the women, you can see there's a, every movement is calculated and they go for it and it's fierce, but you can see that they really give everything that they've got. And I feel like the men, sometimes you can, there's a difference where it almost feels just like some sort of release. Whereas with the women, it feels like a dance. That's what it looked like to me. It was like there's just this beautiful kind of almost like a collaboration between the opposing teams. It was just like this kind of like this beautiful ballet. I would say also I felt more teamwork. I saw that. I could really see that. With the men, again, ultimately it started as a team and they would end just as like last man standing. Because it's hard. I mean, imagine, he's like, you can't see anything. The adrenaline's pumping and everything. But the women, no matter how tired they were, no matter what, I always was able to see, like, they were always looking at each other or communicating, or there's just, yeah, it was really, it was beautiful to see it different in that sense. It's like, it's not work hard, it's work smart. And I thought it was an interesting thing to see.
Well, you actually interview a guy who's a martial arts instructor in the film, and he talks about something which I've heard before, where women tend to not bring their egos as much into martial arts so that you see more precision.
Yeah, exactly. It's like that in itself is refreshing because there's no bravado. There's no none of that. It's just about the moment. And you feel that. And I feel it's kind of, you see how these women really live in the moment. And it's like they're so into, like, Julie with her children, Shoshana with her art, Bridget with her words. It's like they're just so in the moment, and that reflects and that shows even in their style of fighting. I felt like a focus. It's interesting, like when the men fight, it's loud. Even the people around are screaming. Everyone's like, ah. But with the women, there's like this, there's a concentration there. Everything kind of gets quiet. And in so doing, it gets so much more fierce.
yeah, that's true.
It's like this quiet, like, I will wreck you, but I'm not going to make a show out of it. You know, it's just like this. But the beautiful thing also, which is really cute, is that, and I say cute, I mean in a beautiful way. It's I felt a camaraderie. It's like there's this real kind of like a sisterhood. You feel that. Like when the second the fight is done, usually the men will kind of like hug or be like, good job, bro, what's up, leave. The women always is like, they all got together and they all immediately would embrace and support each other and be like, this was awesome. And it was beautiful to see that sisterhood. It was really, 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 really meant a lot to watch that.
Yeah. And I think that in this day and age when, like, gender is such a fluid thing, I don't want to beleaguer this whole gender difference thing, but one of the reasons I wanted to kind of get you to talk about that a little bit is that I think that many times women or people who identify as women or people who identify more, I don't know, quote unquote, traditionally feminine, don't see a place for themselves in martial arts or sports like this. And I wanted to talk with you about this because I think this shows that there is a place for everybody in this kind of a sport, right?
Even Julie says that, you know, it's like no matter what your beliefs, everyone, they put them aside and they all come together for this sport. And you feel that there's just such inclusivity, such acceptance. And that's one thing I really wanted to show, because I think some people might have, unfortunately, kind of preconceived ideas as to the rudely say the types of people or the kinds of people who would do this kind of sport. And again, like that idea of judgment, it's like, we're so quick to just slot people, be like, oh, you know, these people are like that, they're like that. But no, I think that's, you have to be incredibly open to do this sport. Because again, it's so unique. The people who do it already know that they're a part of something really special. And so why shun or block out those who maybe feel unwelcomed in society, which is sad and unfortunate. And I think this sport is a beautiful message. And the idea, again, I'm saying the word a lot, but inclusivity. I think it's a real beautiful thing to, again, break that judgment, break that barrier, break those preconceived ideas that are ultimately wrong. Because where do they come from? Not from us. It comes from influences that say, this is how gender should be, this is how race should be, or what have you. And again, You put on the armor, it doesn't matter. You're a man, you're a woman, gender, race, religion, politics, doesn't matter. It's just you in the armor with your weapon, and you just give everything you have. And it's a way to, maybe in a way, in a healthy way, to express yourself, to let out that anger and those frustrations. And you're letting it out with other people who understand you and why you're doing it. And so they welcome the blow. They welcome the hit, because they feel your frustrations. They feel your anger or your pain or what have you. And they welcome it. And together they grow. And I think it's a beautiful thing to watch.
Absolutely. And I think that a lot of what you're saying now, it comes through the voice of Bridget in this film. So one of the things I noticed about the film is you don't speak in it.
No.
You don't appear. You don't speak. There's no words that are telling us anything. This is all through the voices of the people who are involved in that. So this is obviously a conscious choice on your part. Why did you choose to just let other people do their talking?
Well, besides the fact that I hate the sound of my own voice, I think...
that's too bad today.
I think that it's because, as I said before, I don't want to impose my view, my perspective, my thoughts. It's not about me. It's about them. And I know some documentaries or documentarians feel the need to talk. They feel like they have to kind of guide people through this journey, when in my opinion, I'm not saying they're wrong or I'm better or whatever, but I think it's interesting where it's like, well, no, we can just learn a lot just by watching. And I think that maybe comes from the cliche of, you know, a picture's worth a thousand words. And then this is starting to happen. I hear this more and more where it's like, audiences are a lot more intelligent than I think a lot of filmmakers realize. And it's, they don't need you to kind of hold them by the hand. And that's kind of like where I was going at earlier, where it's like, yeah, I don't show everything. I don't really go into such depth about like them suiting up and putting, it's like, we get it. They're in armor. Or it's like, who am I to talk about Bridget and her experiences? Who am I to talk about Shoshana or Julie? Let them show us. Let them talk to us about that. And so, yeah, I just really didn't want to put my thoughts, my ideas, because ultimately I don't know. As a documentarian, I don't know. And so even I can act like I knew all along afterwards and do a voiceover and be like, yeah, you know, they felt this way and did that, or this sport is about. It's like, well, no, who am I to speak for them? Let them show us.
Yeah. So Bridget, for the people who haven't seen the film yet, because the film is not out yet, she is a person who is a fighter, and she mentions early on that she's got Asperger's. Yeah. And she really takes us through her journey. She gets very personal in how it's affected her life before, now while she's a fighter, things like that. So how much of this film was the women kind of leading you and telling you what they wanted to share? And how much of it was you saying, I think it should go in this direction?
Yeah, that's a very good point. No, the first thing, unfortunately, there wasn't a whole lot about the sport. I didn't know who to contact. I didn't know where to go to. I was just like, oh, Janelle. Because already just when I saw her, I was like, wow, how inspiring is that? And so then she led me to Shoshana. And so I was like, okay, we're going to start in Colorado Springs and film Julie and Shoshana and follow Shoshana's story as she tries to make the American team to go to the World Cup. And I was like, okay, we would discover a lot about her life and the sport through her. And in so doing, my hope was I was going to maybe meet other fighters like her. And that's exactly what happened. She went to the duels national championship, the first of its kind, where it's only for duelists. And that's where I met Julie. And there was only two women there, Shoshana and Julie. And so I realized that at the time, Julie and Shoshana, they were like, it's a beautiful thing to watch. They were best friends, but also each other's competition. And so it's like, there's this competitive friendship that was just like growing, but they love each other. They're sisters, you know? And then I got to know a little bit about Julie and her story about being at the time a domestic abuse survivor, a mother. I'm like, that's such an interesting perspective. And then after through that, we went to another tournament, and that's where I saw Bridget, and here she was with her red hair. And I saw that she was at times more nervous and that she was trembling. And so I was like, there's something interesting there. I wonder who she is. And Shoshana was like, oh, well, she has autism. And so that was like, oh my gosh, like what an incredible story. And so they led me through this journey, and they would kind of be like, so I would of course reach out, be like, oh, when can you film? But ultimately I would discover things with them. There was never like, cause some, you know, there's a truth and it's very well done, but some documentaries, it's actually like the director's literally like, okay, you walk here, you do this. And then people show it and be like, oh my gosh, wow. It's like, well, it's actually an incredibly structured and controlled environment. This was just the complete opposite of that. And also me directing, producing, filming and editing, it was like, I don't mean to boast. I just meant I wanted to learn and make mistakes as a filmmaker to better understand my craft. And so all of it was just this journey. I just wanted to just go and shoot with the little money I had, the time that I had and the equipment that I had, and just kind of just discover and see where it takes me. And then when I look back, obviously there's all these women that I met afterwards. I'm like, oh my gosh, I wish I met them and added them to the film. But it was a journey for sure.
Do you still find yourself following their careers and seeing how they do?
I do. Yeah, I do. I definitely, I do. I watch all the time. I'm always scrolling through and seeing all of their posts. And they're very, the armor community, they're always posting. They're always talking about their sport. They're always talking about their lives. And it's beautiful because they share their hardships. It's you feel that. It's something, it's a group that heals. And so, yeah, of course I follow them. Bridget posts a little less because I know that she's shy, but there's beautiful moments where she just overcomes that. And it's great to see her growth, if I can say it like that.
Yeah, I think so. I think that you can see her opening up more.
Yeah,
as she goes through.
She told me, yeah, it was an emotional moment for me. So when she wrote that song for the film and she starts singing, the day of, we actually drove from LA to Sacramento that. So we just arrived. I get my camera and she's alone because Marcus is working and she's alone in her home. I wanted to kind of, because I knew she wanted to sing. And so I was like, well, let's just, maybe I was wrong, but I felt like it was the right thing to do first almost. Because sometimes if you surprise people like that, you get a more genuine response and they just kind of go with it. She was very nervous. She really started to get incredibly nervous and shaking. And you see it even in the film. I left it. I didn't want to cut because it was such a powerful moment because it was in her kitchen in this intimate setting. You know, you see that the fight is just as intense at home than it is in the arena. And it was such a beautiful moment just to see her just, she breathed and then she just went for it. And I remember just filming there. And then it's like literally almost here, I turn and like, I literally walk because I had my assistant camera operator who was pulling focus and the sound, they were in another room just to give us some privacy. I literally walked in there and they looked at me like, oh my gosh, what a powerful moment, right? But what was moving with that is that then she told me that after there is this open mic night that takes place at a bar in her neighborhood. And she said she never had the courage to really go out and sing. And then because after that, she started doing it, I would see her posts and you would see her just so scared, but just so happy and proud. And that was a really beautiful moment to watch. I'm not saying it's because of me. I was just saying that it was because of her just going for it. You know, again, repeating myself, but this sport helps people just overcome their fears. It's their outlet for that.
Yeah, I know. I think that you see their courage in their own lives, their courage in speaking to you about their own lives, and then the courage that they have when they actually enter the lists. So I think that courage is such a theme through this, which is why I think it's such a positive film. And I do think that people should see it. Now, speaking of courage, at the end of filming, you said they put you in armor so you could try it out. How did that go?
it was, well, they were really nice because it was Marcus, Bridget's boyfriend, who is possibly one of the nicest guys in the world. And so I knew I was in really good hands. And there's Santos, who's just, he's such a cool guy. Alexa, I love her to death. She's so, they were all just so there. And they just were, they're like, you want to do this? You sure? I'm like, yeah. And so I'm trying to be all macho and trying to be all brave and everything. And it was a really cute moment because I was really trying to hold it in. And Alexa was putting the, she's an armored combatant. And you see, she's a very brief interview in the documentary. And she was helping me put on the armor, right? Because I had no idea what I was doing. I'm like, I don't, what am I doing? So she's like putting it on. And then there's this moment of silence. She's like, oh, you're shaking. That's good. So, I was like, what? Me shaking? No. You know, like, I got this. And so I went out there and you actually see me. I put it as a little cameo, just like a little second. At the very end montage, there's a moment where basically you see I punch Marcus in the face and he's charging at me and he just smashes me with an axe on the head. And that, I was like, that moment has to be in the film. My sword's upside down. I'm all caught. I have no idea what I'm doing. And he's, so I'm like, that moment has to be in the movie. So you see me actually fighting Marcus. It was fun. But what was interesting is actually, I couldn't leave without doing that. There was no way I could leave without, as a way to also saying thank you. You know, like I had to share what they experienced in the smallest infinitesimal amount. Just, as, you know, I was like, I have to put on the helmet. I have to put on the gear. And it's exhausting. It's
yeah.
You know, you wouldn't think it, right? Again, people are like, oh, they're hobbyists. They're these people. They just go and drink beers and go put on some armor and beach. It's like, it is so hard. Like you can't see, you can't breathe. Like genuinely, you can't breathe. And I had a big helmet on. You know, some of them were very, as like, I couldn't breathe. And they gave me the lightest armor they had. Some of them go 80 pounds plus. And so putting that armor on, I felt the weight. And I also felt the adrenaline rush and the release and what they feel. Like, it's just, you're no longer you. And yet you find yourself. It's the weirdest thing. It's like, it's just, yeah, it was an experience. It was fun.
And I think that demonstrates that there is a place for everybody in this sport.
Yes, exactly.
Don't be afraid to get in armor. You might have your sword upside down, but
Every state has what they call a chapter. It's essentially a team. Every state, literally. So yeah, if people want to try it, they're so welcoming. They'll get you in armor. They'll put you in a kit and they'll, it's not at all like, oh, you have to pay a membership or whatever. No, it's like, these are friends. You join the armored combat, you become part of a family. You become a friend and they help you out. So yeah, every state has a chapter and people can check them out for sure.
I think that people will definitely be able to get that out of the film. So the film is called Steel Song. When does it come out and where can we see it?
So it comes out on August 31st and on iTunes, Vudu, Fandango Now. There's so many. I'll have to send you a list that you can post because there's quite a long list.
We will definitely give people links to it. And because this is going to come out a little bit early, we'll give people links to the trailer as well so they can get excited about it because it is a really great movie. And I think that it's going to be something worthwhile for not only people who are interested in the sport or maybe interested in the Middle Ages, but also I think people who are learning about the Middle Ages in classrooms and seeing how we can actually find ways to experience it today. So thank you so much for coming on to talk about Steel Song. It was a great film and I really enjoyed it.
Thank you so much for having me. It was a real pleasure.
To find out more about the film, you can visit steelsongfilm.com and you can learn more about Adrian's work at acicerone.com. I recommend Steel Song for the people looking for an interesting documentary, the people who are interested in possibly trying out modern medievalism for themselves, and the people who are teaching about the Middle Ages. You can watch the trailer for Steel Song in the show notes for this episode on medievalist.net, and as Adrian said, you can catch the film August 31st on iTunes, Vudu, YouTube, Vimeo, Google Play, Fandango Now, and other streaming services. Before we go, here's Peter from medievalist.net to tell us what's on the website. What's going on this week, Peter?
Hey. Well, we have started a new series on Harald Hardrada, the famous 11th century Viking. Doesn't end well with him, but you will read that with James Turner. So he's writing, I think it's going to be like 7 or 8 pieces on this. And we have the first one up this week and there'll be another one up before the end of the month. So yeah, I'm pretty excited about that. James did like an Arthurian legends kind of series that just finished up about a month ago. So yeah, he's back here to write more. That's exciting.
Mm-hmm. That's great.
And also, Kate Stevenson has got a piece for us. It's on You Might Be a Medieval Redneck.
That sounds like a fun one.
Indeed, indeed. I think it's a bit about peasants.
Well, yeah, people work in the fields. There's going to be a lot of people with rednecks back in the day. And I guess we'll find out if they are rednecks.
And we'll find out who calls them rednecks. Like, who uses that phrase in the Middle Ages?
I need to read this article for sure. And this week that's just passed, you and I went to the Art Gallery of Ontario to see a quick and small but really nice exhibit that was talking about medieval devotional literature and practices. So that was fun, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah. Like, the Art Gallery of Ontario has a wonderful collection of medieval stuff. And, like, they want to kind of highlight some of their manuscripts. They have such lovely little tiny things, like their collection of, like, wood. Was that sculptures? What would we call it?
Yes, the little devotional beads that have intricate sculptures inside, and they are just amazing. If you haven't seen them before, you should see them. Peter, you're going to be posting something about this soon, right?
Yeah. We're going to talk with a curator on that, and hopefully be around the end of the month. But yeah, if you check out our Instagram and Twitter and stuff like that, you will see a lot of images from this exhibition, which is really nice. And we love the AGO here in Toronto.
Yes, absolutely. If you are in Toronto, you got your vaccines, you got your mask, head over to the AGO and see some of the really cool medieval stuff that they have, especially in the new hallway exhibit that has a whole bunch of medieval manuscripts for you to look at. All right. Well, thanks, Peter.
Hey,
see
thanks.
You next week.
Take care.
Thank you, as always, to our patrons on patreon.com for all your support. Patrons of the Medieval Podcast can choose from all sorts of amazing stuff, like subscriptions to Medieval Warfare Magazine and the Medieval Magazine, membership in our book club, and our exclusive maps by Tina Ross. To find out how to become a patron of the Medieval Podcast, please visit patreon.com/medievalists. For everything from combat to courtly love, follow medievalist.net on Facebook or Twitter at medievalists. You can find me, Danielle Cebulski, on social media at 5MIN Medievalist or 5-Minute Medievalist. And you can find my books at all your favorite online bookstores, where you can even pre-order the new one, How to Live Like a Monk, Medieval Wisdom for Modern Life, which comes out in October. Our music is Beyond the Warriors by Guy Frog. Thanks for listening, and have yourself an awesome day.